This week on Messing About in Ships, we bring you A Mariner's Perspective, Twit Cards by Captain Kelly Sweeney, E. Loran, 29 Reasons Not to Be a Mariner, and What's Going On in Europe. Messing About in Ships. I'm Captain John Conrad of GCaptain.com, and my co-host and partner is Peter Mello of SeaFever.org. Good evening, Peter.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. What's new? What's new in California?
Oh, not much new in California. You know, I'm from New York. And where are you from?
I'm from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, okay. So a little news on that end of things. But
I won't
rub it in too hard.
What are you talking about?
Oh, it's Super Bowl.
What's that?
Oh, yeah. Not maritime related. I should stay on traffic, huh?
Yeah, that's the thing. If it's, you know. Yeah, this is a little bit of a bummer here, I guess, but it was a great game. So, you know what? We're going to be back next year.
It was really good. What else are you up to? You're heading back to Bermuda, I hear.
Yeah, I got an early morning flight for a week in Bermuda, and then come back next Monday over the weekend. We're going sailing on their tall ship down there, the Spirit of Bermuda, for Saturday and Sunday. Looking forward to that. And besides that, got a bunch of meetings and trying to put this Maritime High School together down there, so it's pretty exciting.
Great stuff.
Yeah. And you're on your way back to the ship?
I have another week.
Oh, you got another week. Great.
Yeah, not too bad.
Good. So we'll be able to talk again next week from dry land.
Yeah.
Good.
So what do we have announcements this week? You had some listeners on our map, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Let me try and pull that up. But we had, I believe, about four or five listeners on there. A bunch of them actually came through today. And we have one that, unfortunately, they didn't leave their name, but the pin is placed in Rollinsford, New Hampshire. So if you're there and you can go update and put your name on there, that'd be great. BJ Cowles is another person who pinned the map. And Jeff Musk put a pin on the map this week. I think you know Jeff. Is that right?
Yes. I don't know him. He emailed an article to be published in GCaptain. And as you know, we're an open blog, so anyone can submit an article. And he did so. And we're going to review it and hopefully publish it.
Very cool. Excellent. And then we got Andy Warren from, it looks like, California Maritime Academy. And he signed up, I believe, this week. And finally, we haven't verified this or not, but we have Bart Simpson on here. We're not sure if it's the real Bart Simpson or not. But anyway, Bart Simpson signed up on our map. So we're glad to have him as a listener.
All right. And some other announcements, I just wanted to mention really quick, Bob Cootie of Maritime Accident Casebook, he also does the Maritime Accident podcast over there. He sent out a quick request asking for your confined space incident information. So if you had a close call or if there's a something with a confined space entry going down into the tanks, doing inspections that you saw that was unsafe, or just something you want to bring, put light on, ideas for improvements perhaps, you can email Bob directly. The email address is confidential@maritimeaccident.org. And as the email says, it's a confidential entry, so put your close calls, and he's going to compile them and share them with the rest of the world, make everyone a little safer.
Excellent. And we'll put that up on the show blog too, right? That information?
Yes.
Excellent.
So we now have Captain Kelly Sweeney is going to give another Mariner's perspective, and let's roll that tape.
Ahoy to all the Messing About in Ships podcast listeners. This is Captain Kelly Sweeney with another update. Today, my topic concerns the TWIC card, Transportation Workers Identity Card, which nearly 800,000 U.S. citizens, including merchant mariners, longshore workers, truckers at ports, port officials, people who work at the port, are going to have to get by September of 2008. Now, there are two stories that I have regarding mariners' experiences with the TWIC card that concern me greatly. The first story has to do with a captain I know, a Kings Point graduate, who's had a master's license for 20 years. He was born in the Netherlands, even though he's a U.S. citizen. And he was turned down for his TWIC card because he was born in the Netherlands. I just heard about that story a couple weeks ago. Second story has to do with an unlicensed mariner who applied for a TWIC card and was turned down. The reason he was turned down is because he was born in Okinawa, even though he was born on a military base in Okinawa of U.S. military parents. Now, nowhere in the disqualifying criteria does it say anything about being born in a foreign country will disqualify you. Yet both these mariners were turned down because they were born, even though they're U.S. citizens, were born in other countries. This is something that I'm very concerned with because there are so many of my fellow mariners who were born in other countries but now who are citizens or who are legal immigrants who are working either as officers or unlicensed sailors in a U.S. merchant marine. This is a story we're going to be following because, you know, I wonder what's going on with it. Till my next update, and hopefully I'll have more information for you on what happened on appeal. This is Captain Kelly Sweeney, Moose Sailor.
All right, we want to thank Captain Kelly for that comment, and we want to let everyone know that if they're having any problems with the TWIC cards, there are two great options. One is to post discussion on GCaptain's forum. Share your stories and tips for getting the TWIC card. The other one is the port. Internet port to call for last week was Maritime Licensing Blog. We'll have links in the show notes, but Marlene Schumer over there runs a great blog, and she outlines all the TWIC problems and answers questions. So those are your two resources for that.
Great. Great. Seems to be, you know, quite an interesting challenge right now for mariners to kind of sort through all this. And be interesting how it develops going forward.
Yeah, and we're all on the same boat. So any information our listeners can give is going to help me out personally and all the other listeners. So
yeah, if anybody has any if anybody has any direct experience and they would like to submit a comment, please do. Please submit us an audio comment, either attach it to an email or call in our number, which we'll give at the end of the show. Tell us about your experiences. We'd love to hear about it.
Great. Now for our first story, which one were we going with first?
Well, I guess I could jump in there. Let's see. I picked a story that actually I'm not sure if it actually made it into the Discoverer section or not, but it came up the other day, February 2nd, on marinebuzz.com. And the title of the story was 27, the blog entry rather, was 27 Reasons Why Seafaring and Shipping Profession is No More Attractive. And it was a pretty extensive post about why becoming a professional mariner is not really an ideal course for young people to chart right now. And he had 27 reasons. And some of those reasons include expensive initial training, no career growth, limited shore jobs, unstable career, less manpower, more work. Number six was not able to cope with the technological developments. Seven, rough season seasickness caused less productivity. Eight is piracy threats. And so you kind of get the idea here. He has 27 of these things, 27 reasons why. And I guess I just and I did intend, I haven't yet put a comment. He's got seven comments in there. And John, I think you've actually added in a comment, and you joined the discussion here. I guess I was a little taken aback by it from a couple different perspectives. One is that you know, these 27 reasons are obviously justified or you know, they can be backed up. But you know, many careers present a list of 27 or more reasons why they may not be attractive to people. So on the face of it, I found it to be a slightly discouraging post. And I guess that partly has to do in that I'm embarking on an initiative here in a country to try to get young people to become professional mariners, partly because of the career opportunity, but also partly because of the personal life development opportunities that we believe that going to sea at a young age creates for adolescents. But anyway, I just felt that that's a glass half full, glass half empty type of perspective, and obviously this post is one that is one that presents a half empty glass. And it's also, you know, being that it's the internet, maybe the post was written to attract traffic and attention. So anyway, we'll have a link to the show notes. I intend in the next few days to kind of put some comments down in there. But this one was one that kind of just caught me a little aback. And John, what were your thoughts? You did comment and participate in the discussion.
I have a few comments. On one hand, it was written by Old Sailor. That's the handle he goes by. And I want to say this is an excellent blog. He always puts in graphics and real thought into his posts. But you can kind of tell, I don't believe he's a sailor now. If he was, it would probably be the 100 reasons not to go out to sea. But that being said, the other fact is I agree. Almost all of these are legitimate reasons. And my problem with the post is not the reasons themselves. My first problem is the order. Number one is expensive initial training. And we have to remember, this is looking at the international community, and me being U.S.-based, there are a lot of opportunities in the United States for college tuition and scholarships. So I think that really is a concern for international mariners. Number two was no career growth, and it says that at most one could become a master chief engineer of a ship, and further vertical growth is limited or not possible. And That number two, I disagree fully with. I think you have, especially nowadays, I'm getting my master's degree online, and fully intend to allow it to open up opportunities if I wanted to go shoreside and move up with a company. I think the reason most captains stay captains is because it's a really good job. The pay is good. You're in charge of the ship, and you have a lot of reward, responsibility, but reward that comes out of that.
Yeah, on that, if I could just jump in too on that no career growth point, and I totally agree with you. And the way I look at it, to be a master or chief engineer on a ship is a pretty damn, significant position to be in. Responsibility, as you state, is clearly evident there. But it's you're running an enterprise as the master of a ship. And a very complex enterprise, and that on a shore side, there's I think very few challenges that match that. So to get to that level, maybe there's not a lot of his thought was there weren't a lot of places to go above that. But the same thing happens in the business world where you run a division or something. There can only be so many CEOs and. And so that no career growth one, I kind of jumped out at me too. So
yeah, everyone has a boss.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Right.
I do have one other perspective on this, and so Joseph Keefe, editor of Maritime Executive Magazine, did a very interesting article where he stated with salaries for U.S. mariners being what they are and 6 months vacation. I go out to sea for 3 weeks and then I'm home for 3 weeks. Other mariners go for 3 months, home for 3 months. And a lot of the extras that are aboard ship now with DVD players, some ships have cinemas and weight rooms. He kind of said, what are you guys complaining about? I'd like to head back out to sea and give up this office job. But that was only the first part of his article. He then goes into explaining how there's increased responsibility on captains, how budget cuts are really coming into place, how crew sizes are shorter, increased weather concerns with these hurricanes that we're seeing, and that the mariner shortage is thinning out the industry, meaning people are getting promoted faster than they would have in the past, and they're also having to do more jobs to make up for the lack of experience as these ships are being built and pulling the experienced mariners apart. So I think there are a lot of legitimate concerns, and I'll link to that article in the show notes. It really goes over both sides. But overall, I'd say this is a wonderful time to get into shipping. It's an expanding industry, and the global communications, having satellite access on the ships, and better working conditions. People like Bob Cootie doing the Maritime Accident Casebook, really shining light on some of the safety issues. I think it's the best time ever to head out to sea.
Yeah, well, I joined recently a training organization, and my focus right now is youth. So this kind of caught me a little bit in that I'm hoping a lot of the young people that might read this don't get too discouraged. And I know we have some young listeners from the Maritime Academies, California, Maine, New York, and certainly Mass Maritime. We want to keep them on a proper course for their careers. Having said all that, this is a great blog. Marine Buzz is a super blog. He does a great job nearly every day, like you said earlier. Very interesting posts, great links. And, part of me thinks that this was written kind of to just drive some traffic or get some attention. But certainly there's legitimacy in any one of those gripes. But go to any corporation in America and you can find a line of people outside of most managers' doors with similar type gripes about what it's like to work there. So anyway, just an interesting post.
Yeah, definitely gets everyone talking and thinking, which is always a good thing for a blog post.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what social media is all about. So, John, that was my sea story for the day. What do you got?
Well, I have two. I really quickly wanted to just point everyone to the the crane ship Zhen Hao, a heavy lift crane ship that that beached itself right in the busy port city of Rotterdam. And being so close to a big city, they were all the amateur photographers down at the beach taking amazing photos and posting them to Flickr. So this is just one in a series of incidents that have weather-related incidents that have occurred lately. There was also the river dance and I'm forgetting the name of the second ship that grounded just in the last few days. And the weather situation, the weather is really causing these incidents, and spectacular video and photos are coming out of this, but the fact of the matter is it's a fairly unsafe condition. And I was talking to Rob Stormer of Robin Storm's blog, and he told me that there were 68 casualties so far this year, and that was a few days ago.
Wow.
So it's definitely shaping up to be a sad situation. You wonder whether it's weather conditions changing or the spread out of experience due to the growth in the industry, or if there are other factors at play here. But it's a record month in a really bad way.
Yeah, my prior career spent 20 years as a marine insurance underwriter, and I just never remember seeing a month like January with the high profile casualties. And I think it partly is, you nailed it, partly also is the way, lack of a better term, citizen journalism, or the way people can kind of get involved in images and video and blog postings, kind of bring some of these things to the forefront. But having access over that period of time as an underwriter to ship casualty information, pretty reliable stuff, I never remember seeing anything of this kind of volume in a single short time period. So it's pretty interesting. It'd be interesting to try to figure out what's causing it and what the solutions might be.
Yeah, and we're gonna keep on top of that story, and Robin Storm is another great resource for that. But
yeah, so what do you got?
My main story of the week is one I'm excited about. Do you remember the days of 10-point dividers and Loran C overlays on charts? They may be coming back. Actually, not. But the President Bush has just approved the 2009 budget for the United States government. And among other things, the budget documents notes funding for Enhanced LORAN, also known as E-LORAN. And it is HK Law's site says it has been identified as the primary candidate as the national backup system for position, navigation, and timing. So what this is I'm just learning about this today, so I don't have all the facts, but basically LORAN was the precursor to GPS. You had before that you had systems like DECA, and then LORAN came, and it had must have had a 40-year career from the 50s till the mid-90s when GPS really started coming into play. It was the way to find out where you were. LORAN has some major limitations. It's based on radio signals, so you have to be in range of the radio transmitters to get your position. And then those who have worked with 10-point dividers and LORAN charts remember you were given these obscure numbers that were timings from the radio stations, and it was pretty complex. Yeah, and you had to plot yourself. It didn't give you just a printout of a lat and longitude. This new system is going to use the same stations. It's going to use the same type of technology. It's still going to be a LORAN system, and in every sense of the word, but it's going to be enhanced and brought up to the digital age. So everyone's going to be happy to hear you won't have to use the 10-point dividers and any of the obscure. The systems are going to give you just lan and long like a GPS does. Mm. But what's really great about this is there's a real need for this. And I work on a drill ship, and we're all about redundancy. So we have 3 gyros on board, 3 wind sensors, 3 of everything. And it's called triple modular redundancy, meaning that the let's take the gyro compass to figure out our heading. Each of the 3 gyros is going to be slightly different. They're going to vote on it, on what the heading is. And the computer takes the 3, votes on it, and picks the best one. If one goes down, you still have 2 systems to tell you where the ship is heading. And if the second one goes down, you still have 1 good system. The important thing about this is GPS is our only system right now for positioning at sea. It's a great system for the middle of the Atlantic Ocean where you're not worried about running into things. But as ECTIS and AIS play a critical role in coastal navigation, as we saw with the Costco Boo San oil spill in San Francisco, we're really putting all our eggs in one basket with the GPS. And GPS has some real limitations. You have to have a view of the sky is one limitation. And the other limitation is it's a U.S.-based system. And this is a real concern for international users of GPS. Now, Europe is launching the Galileo system. And Galileo is the European version of GPS. And a lot of mariners were disappointed to learn that it's going to use the exact same technology as GPS. The advantage of this is that your GPS receiver you own at home or in your car is going to be able to work off of this European system. The disadvantage is, though, that any flaws that are in the U.S. system are also going to be carried through to the European system. So they didn't take the opportunity to really come up with any improvements or do anything great with it. So this enhanced LORAN, E-LORAN, is going to be the first real system, proposed or actual, that gives accurate position data to the end user. And they say what the difference is, LORAN is high-powered, meaning it's robust against electromagnetic interference. It's less likely to be affected by, say, you were sailing by a television transmitter or something like that. It operates at low frequencies. It's ground wave propagation diffracts around obstacles. So if you have an obstacle in the way, the signal can get around it. And it's a position and timing system, which I haven't figured out the advantage to that yet. The low frequency response, the fact that it operates on low frequency is the primary reason it's getting approved for this budget. And that's because GPSs are very easy to to jam.
Okay.
It doesn't take very much. You can go to a Radio Shack and buy the parts it takes to jam a GPS. And when we have ships operating, ships, airplanes, and our reliance on GPS increases, it's very easy for a terrorist to put together these parts and jam the signal and cause havoc. This LORAN signal, because it runs off a huge radio antennas operating at very low frequencies, it is not something that's that they're able to jam. It's not going to be the only system. GPS is still going to play an important part because LORAN has its own limitations. Namely, you have to be within range of that radio signal. It's not going to work out at sea, mm-hmm. And they still haven't gotten the accuracy down to the level of GPS. But just the fact that we have a secondary system, a backup, that's reliable, is encouraging. And the other great thing is if you've ever started up your car in a parking garage and you plug in the address in your navigational system, you'll know it's not going to get a signal. It's not going to know where you are. Once this Loran kicks into play, it's going to be useful for your car navigation. I really assume, you know, that the size of these units is probably considerable now. They're bulky units, but technology's only advancing, and I don't see any reason GPS and an ELORAN receiver 5 years down the road couldn't be placed in a small dashboard car GPS. So it's gonna give you that added ability to really find where you are, whether you're in a parking garage or you're in the forest hiking with a high amount of trees covering overhead. So.
Well, that's why people read G Captain and come here, because you say you don't know. You're just kind of doing some research on this. Pretty thorough coverage, and I'm sure you're going to keep us all apprised of things as you learn more.
Yeah.
Very good.
And I'm working with Pambo blog on expanding the story, because I know very little myself. Stay tuned.
Great. Well, that's great. Very interesting. Time to move on to our internet ports of call.
Yeah. What's yours for this week?
My internet port of call this week is something a little different. It's not a blog or a podcast or anything like that. It's actually a new online game called Pirates of the Burning Sea from Flying Lab Software. And I came about this through a New York Times article. It was on the front page of one of the sections. I think it was the art section. Earlier last week, January 31st, actually, and there was an article entitled A Form of Internet Piracy That Involves Actual Virtual Pirates. And the author of that article was Seth Scheisel, and here's a few things he wrote about it. That it is based in a semblance of reality is one of the most refreshing aspects of Pirates of the Burning Sea, the captivating new online game from Flying Lab Software that opened last week after 6 years in development. After all, there are dozens of games out there for aspiring sorcerers, dwarves, and elves. There are another handful for would-be space jockeys. But until now, there have been almost no major online games set in an approximation of the real world. He also goes on to tell you a little bit about the game. It's not as polished maybe as some of the other games that are out there. But the sailing components are fairly realistic, and they did have to actually tone it down. He says here, we first built this very realistic sailing system where if you turned into the wind and didn't take down your sails, you would slow down and stop and actually go backwards, he said. Real-life sailors thought it was pretty cool, but most people hated it. So it's interesting. It seems like a very realistic game. What intrigues me about this is that lots of businesses, lots of corporations are now using gaming actually to develop strategic skills and leadership skills in some of in employees. And this, you know, instead of a shoot 'em up game, and in fact, Halo 3, I just was reading an article where actually even some schools are using Halo 3. As a teaching, teamwork and teaching tool. Here we have a game that has some semblance of reality, as they say in the article here, and some historical basis. You know, it's basically situated in the Caribbean basin, and there's probably some really interesting teaching opportunities that this game can create, and I'm looking forward to exploring that. I've actually was in on the beta on this a while back and didn't really get into to fooling around with it too much, but I do look forward to kind of exploring a little bit and checking it out, and that would be cool if we can get some of our listeners to get involved as well. So did you see this at all, John?
No, there's another piece of software I did a review on G-Captain called Ship Simulator 2008. Got some excellent reviews for its realism. Unfortunately, back in college, I had a bit of a game addiction, and I'm not willing to put in the time. I've quit it cold turkey, so I've stayed away from games since then. Just the amount of time they take up.
But this might be the way to get you on that tall
really
ship.
Good. Yeah, you practice before you head out.
There you go. Yeah, the review was really good, and I look forward to seeing if there's a way to. I'm going to explore a little bit about this because we have some young people joining in our program, and there might be a way to integrate this into some learning modules. So anyway, that's my internet protocol this week, Pirates of the Burning Sea. So check it out. What do you got?
Great. My protocol is maritimeterrorism.com, and this is a brand new blog. I actually don't know very much about it. I've been in email contact with the writer of the blog, Mr. Akiva Lorenz. He worked for the International Institute of Counterterrorism, the ICT, in Israel as a program manager. He was responsible for the ICT's technology projects. He's also done extensive research, and he holds a BA in government counterterrorism and intelligence from the Interdisciplinary Center in Israel. Again, it's a brand new blog, but what makes or breaks a blog, it seems to me, is that it gives pertinent, timely information, that it's updated regularly, and that it has some way of grabbing it, readers. You know, it's got to look good and have some multimedia components. And I can't speak for the future, and I don't have much history on the site, but the first few days of its operation, it looks really promising, and it's something I'm going to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it actually made my blog this week. I did a post about who's the smartest maritime blogger at all, and I was happy to see that these guys came in at the genius level. So that was very comforting to know that maritime tourism, terrorism.com is a pretty intelligently written blog.
A little better than I did.
No, you did all right, though. You did all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're college level.
Sure.
Anyway, yeah, I checked it out, and it is interesting, and it's definitely going to be something I keep an eye on as well. So, yeah, thanks for that. So what else do we have this week to tell our listeners, share with our listeners? Anything before we sign off?
The big news, the upcoming special feature.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So we're really excited to announce we are putting the final touches on a three-part series about the rescue of the Sean Seymour II. This was a sailboat that got in trouble between the U.S. coast and Bermuda, about 200 miles offshore, and got hit by a really bad weather system. And how we kind of got involved with this is the captain of the ship, Captain Jean-Pierre, he put his logbook from the incident online and created a blog out of it. And wrote a detailed summary, minute to minute, about everything that happened. And we posted this on, he posted it on his blog. And then did the rounds. He came on G-Captain and did a 10 tips, if you're ever out to sea in bad weather, survival tips. And we've kind of been going back and forth of ideas, and we are happy to announce we have the entire crew from the rescue helicopter who performed the rescue coming on, messing about on ships. They're gonna go through exactly what happened that day, and they were all awarded medals for it. So it was a real act of heroism, and we're happy to have them on the podcast.
Yeah, they're. It's a great listen. It is really inspiring and riveting, and it's going to be great to get that up. Do we have a date when we're going to get the first section of that up, John?
No, we're just we Peter finished editing it, and we're just letting the Coast Guard guys preview the audio and give their final okay. Once that happens, we'll post it up, and then next week we have the the pilot of the C-130 spotter plane who found this sailboat. We already recorded the interview with him. That's going to be next week. And then the following week, we're going to have the captain of the sailboat come on. So we're going to get all three perspectives. We're going to have the actual captain who is out there at sea in trouble. Then the spotter plane, the big C-130 that came overhead, he talks about how he found the sailboat and how he handed it off to the rescue crew. And then the crew that actually did the rescue. We have the whole crew, the rescue swimmer, the spotter, the pilot, and the aircraft commander. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, it's really awesome stuff. And so if we'll obviously post it up on the blog, and if you subscribe through iTunes, it will come into your feed that way, right?
Yes, it sure will.
Yeah. So there's nothing you really need to do differently than that. It's going to be in addition to what we normally do every week here, and we're really excited about bringing this to you. So and we'd love to have you guys participate in any way that you feel comfortable. You can always comment on the blog, which is messingaboutinships.com. And you can send us an email at podcast@messingaboutinships.com. And if you want to attach an audio file to that, a short audio comment, that would be fantastic. You can also get John at his blog, or his whole smorgasbord of ways to engage with John. His blog, the Discover news site, the forums, the Mariner Web Tools over there. Now we actually have some people submitting articles for you over there, John, so that's real exciting too. And that's gcaptain.com. You can always leave a comment on my blog, seafever.org, and that's SEA-FEVER.org. You can send us a comment, an audio comment. You can call in using Skype, and that would be MAIS podcast, Messing About in Ships podcast. That's MAIS podcast. And finally, we actually have a Skype in number there. You can dial 206-973-7000 to leave a comment on a recorded comment there, and we can download it and find a way to insert it into the show. So no excuses for ways to participate. And if you haven't put yourself up on that listener map yet, please do that too.
Yeah, I think the best way is just pick up a phone and call us. It works just like voicemail. You're going to hear a brief intro and then the beep, and you just say your comment. And it's real easy, so pick up the phone.
Great. Well, I'm off to Bermuda. Hopefully, maybe there I can. I was thinking maybe I might do a few interviews, if possible, with some people while we're sailing the boat, and maybe we can bring those into the show next week. But I'll be back, and looking forward to recording another episode with you.
Sounds great. And here comes some pod safe music for you to enjoy.
This is where I say I've had enough. No one should ever feel the way that I feel now. A walking open wound, a trophy display of bruises, and I don't believe that I'm getting any better. Any better. Waiting here with hopes the phone will ring, and I'm thinking awful things. Pretty sure that you would notice. And this apartment, starving for an argument, anything at all to break the silence. Wandering this house like I've never wanted out, and this is about as social as I get now. And I'm throwing away the letters that I am writing you, 'cause they would never do. I would never do. Starving for an argument, anything at all to break the silence. do I think?